You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell, and this is The Life Aquatic. I first contacted Chuck and Linda back in January, before Boat Radio had begun broadcasting. At the time, they were based in the Marquesas, an island group in French Polynesia, still administered by France. They didn't have decent internet then, and suggested that we talk when they returned to the United States to visit relatives. No problem, I thought. When will that be? November, Chuck informed me. Okay, I thought, that's a pretty long-term arrangement. But it is indicative of the life that Chuck and Linda lead. And here we are, and I'm certain you'll find it was worth the wait. Chuck and Linda, welcome to Boat Radio.
Yes, thank you for the invite, and Hello. It's nice to talk to you.
That's really good to talk to you both. So, now, I found myself wondering where to begin with this interview, because between you, you have probably the most extensive travel, sailing, and liveaboard history of anybody that I have spoken to so far for this programme. And I should start, actually, by explaining that, in fact, many Boat Radio listeners will already be familiar with some of your exploits from your blog, your website, Jacaranda's Journey. Together, you set sail aboard SV Jacaranda in 2005. But of course, that's not the beginning of your story. So let's turn back the clock a few decades. Linda, when did you first get a taste of life afloat?
I fell in love with sailing when my father introduced sailing to our family. I was in my early 20s. My dad had sailed most of his life, small boats, on a river in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And I grew up in New Jersey on the ocean. And it wasn't till their 25th wedding anniversary when they bareboat chartered a sailing boat in the Caribbean. And we went down there for a few weeks all together. And I just fell in love with it. And it turns out that after my sister, the youngest in our family, went to college, he and my mom closed the house. He sold his medical practice, and they took off on a boat for 2 years in the Caribbean. And that was my first introduction to cruising on a sailboat. And I was hooked. I was just totally hooked. I loved it. But I didn't really sail that much again till I moved to San Diego and I met Chuck, which was in about 1990.
So that was 28 years after your first introduction, or thereabout, about 3 decades. I should explain to Boat Radio listeners that the reason I sound a little echoey is that I have sought shelter. As regular listeners will know, I like to sit in my garden recording these programs, and you will very often hear the chickens clucking and the turkeys gobbling and the occasional dog barking. But it's pouring down with rain, bucketing down, as Chuck put it earlier on. Mallorca's a really sunny place, but we do have to have some rain, otherwise the gardens will wither away. But this is absolutely torrential, so that rushing noise in the background is the absolute tipping rain. So, Linda, back to you. When your dad sold his medical practice and your mom and dad started cruising, did you go with them for part of the way?
No, I visited them, and so I experienced the lifestyle just with a glimpse of what they were doing, with all of its excitement and the communication challenges, but I didn't spend a lot of time with them. But I always loved the ocean, and I found after visiting them and sailing with them that I loved being on the ocean.
And then it was 3 decades before you met Chuck. But in that intervening time, did you always have at the back of your mind this notion that one day you might throw your lot in with an itinerant sailor man and float off into the sunset.
Yes, that was always a fantasy for me. I didn't know if it could come true or not, but I always dreamed that.
Wow. So your dreams did come true?
Yes, they did. They really did. And now I'm living the life that I dreamed about, and I'm just loving it. After 12 years of being on Jacaranda full-time with Chuck, it's still one of the most wonderful lifestyles and ways of traveling and seeing the world that ever was.
And we're still talking to each other.
yeah, living in a fairly confined space. But we'll talk about Jacaranda a little later on. Chuck, you grew up in San Diego, right? A short distance from the famous Miramar Marine Corps Air Station.
Yes, I did. I arrived there when I was in sixth grade. My folks retired and moved to San Diego. And we lived just a block from the beach, from Mission Bay. So that kind of really started my interest in sailing. I had friends that had little boats. And so we sailed these little boats around when we were, 13, 14 years old. So that kind of started it. But both my brother and sister are considerably older than I am. And my sister was the one that really started the whole sailing scene. She moved to the Caribbean and worked on a charter boat for a few years. And then my brother started sailing and racing in San Diego. And so that kind of led, one thing led to another.
Actually, I know the Mission Bay area a little and La Jolla. I had a friend who actually worked at the base, the Miramar base, for a little while. And I went to stay with him. This would be at least 25 years ago. But it was an absolutely beautiful part of the world. What an amazing beach to grow up on. Those sunsets across the Pacific, absolutely extraordinary.
Yes, it is a great spot. It's getting a little crowded now, but I guess most nice places are.
Yeah. Give us a quick rundown. Because despite the fact that San Diego, and particularly the Mission Bay area, despite the fact that they're a beautiful part of the world, you've lived all over the place and in very varied climates as well. You've lived in Norway.
Yes, I did.
Was this your work that took you to these places?
No, it's funny that you ask, because I have a distinct impression in my mind about my mother waving goodbye out the window on my first trip to Europe, saying that I was going to be gone a couple months and I'd see her, in a few months. And it was, this was right after high school. And I came back, I want to say 4 years later. I lived in Europe for a while, and just wherever I could stop to make some money and put a roof over my head, I did. And so I spent time in Norway. I worked on a farm and lived with some friends in Denmark and helped build a summer house, and lived in Italy and worked for the Count of Monte Molino in the central part of Italy and as a groundskeeper on his estate, and spent some time in Australia, worked in the mines, worked in a boatyard in Australia, then ended up New Zealand for a while, and Samoa, lived in Samoa for a couple years, and then came back to the States from there. So I have had a little bit of a touch of the world, in my early 20s.
Sure, I should say so. I mean, I have a four-year-old daughter who can't sit still, but you've taken it to a whole other level. I mean, what prompts you to move on each time?
You know, I wanted to see so much, and after a few months in one spot, my feet got a little itchy, and I wanted to see other places, so I just kind of kept rolling along.
Linda, you've had a pretty varied work life. Two. Did you start out as an urban planner?
Yes, that's my professional training, is in urban planning and landscape design and urban design. And I did work in that for quite a long time, but things kind of morphed into different positions as I went along. I then became director of a children's museum and worked with children's museum professionals on an international level for a while after leaving the directorship. Then I moved to San Diego and worked at the Natural History Museum, and then became an artist working in mosaics and jewelry. And that's what I was doing when I ended up living on the boat.
When you ended up living on the boat. Well, we'll get to that in a moment. Chuck, where did you learn to sail?
I learned to sail really in San Diego as a kid, just kind of tootling around the bay. It wasn't until I ended up in New Zealand living in Auckland, which really is, they call it the city of the sails. It really is a fantastic place to sail, that I thought, well, I really better get off my duff and take advantage of this great opportunity. So I really got into racing quite heavily in New Zealand, participated 3-4 times a week in the summer, and that really set the desire flowing there. So I really enjoyed racing and did that for a year and a half before I moved back to Australia. So that really helped me a lot. And I always say to people when they say, well, we'd love to go cruising, but we never sailed before, we always tell them, well, just go down to the yacht club on the day the races are and try to get a ride, because that'll make you a better sailor and a better cruiser.
So Chuck, how did you two meet?
Oh, I'll let Linda tell that story.
Okay, sure. So Linda, how did it happen? You were an artist by this time when you met Chuck, right?
No, I was still working in museums, and I mentioned that I fell in love with sailing when my parents introduced me to it. But my life took me in several different directions, as life tends to do. And I got married shortly after college, and I had 2 sons by my husband. And I followed him to Salt Lake City, Utah, where he went to school. And that's where the 2 boys were born. I didn't get to do much by the way of the ocean there, but I did learn to scuba dive. I got certified to scuba dive in Bear Lake, which is in Utah and Idaho, and I did do some small boat sailing in the reservoirs there. He unfortunately passed away from a physical illness, and I decided to move to San Diego, and that's where this story picks up with Chuck. I took the 2 children there and decided, here I am back at the ocean, and I want to go sailing. But I really didn't know anybody in San Diego. So I started reading the personal ads in a local newspaper, and I found Chuck's ad. Avid sailor, professional, looking for someone to go sailing with. So I contacted him, and we got along just great. We really clicked. But unfortunately, I didn't understand that he was wanting to go cruising. He wanted to go away on the sailboat, and I didn't want to do that with 2 small children.
Okay, how old were the boys at this point?
They were probably about 4 and 7. And so we just decided that our lifestyles were incompatible at that point in time, and we decided to remain friends. And I cared about him a lot, so I said, let me rewrite that ad so that a woman answers who knows that you want to go off cruising. And that's what happened. And he met another woman through his new ad that I wrote. And he went off cruising, and I stayed in San Diego with the boys.
Okay.
So he...
Right. What? This is a very interesting... Where is that other woman now?
we don't know.
he remained with her cruising in the South Pacific for 6 years while I did my thing in San Diego, and I moved the boys to Italy for 1 year. And that's when Chuck came back to San Diego for the cruising kitty. He needed to make some more money to stay out there cruising. I wasn't there, but we were in touch with each other. And then the following year, he came back to earn more money for the cruising kitty. And by then, I was back in San Diego. And we got together as old friends and just were amazed to see that the old flame was still there. We clicked again and decided we really loved each other. And
right. So you... At some point, I suppose, politely asked the other woman to leave.
That's correct.
The boat was still in Australia when he came back to San Diego and we reconnected. So he had a little bit of delicate politics to do. And we discussed it, and he I still did not want to go cruising until my youngest boy went to college. And then I felt I was free to go ahead and do what I wanted to do, which was going to be 7 years in the future. So Chuck decided that he would wait for me for 7 years.
That's quite a commitment. I mean, that's very romantic.
It was worth it.
Yeah, sure. Well, obviously.
So I brought the boat back from Australia, and we ended up settling in San Diego in Linda's house, and I helped raise her two boys, and we got them off to college. And
then we left on Jacaranda. That's where the story picks up, the cruising story picks up for us together in 2005 when we left San Diego.
Wow. But in actual fact, by that time, Chuck, you had already owned Jacaranda for more than two decades at that point. Have I got that right?
Yes. Yeah, I've owned Jacaranda now more than 30 years. So it's we call her our Volkswagen bus. She's not very fancy, doesn't go very fast, but has served us quite nicely.
Yeah, well, I should say so, yeah. Well, I tell you what, this is boat radio, so we should find out a little bit about Jacaranda. So can you give us a quick rundown?
So the design came in from 1944. The original boatyard, or the boat was called an Owens Cutter. And one of the brothers, the yard was owned by a couple brothers. One of the brothers was a naval architect, and they were primarily a powerboat, building wood powerboats. But the naval architect talked his other brother into letting them do one boat. So they did a boat called an Owens Cutter, and that was in the 40s, and it dominated both sides of the Pacific and also the Atlantic from the U.S., in racing. And then in the 60s, a company in upstate New York called Allied bought the rights to that boat and built a few of these out of glass, and called it an Allied 39. So she's 39 feet overall, a lot of overhang on either end to beat the rule and the old CCA rules from the States. And then just shortly after she was built, they went to IOR. So all those boats with the long overhangs at either end that were built to beat the rule were no longer competitive any longer. So anyway, she then became a cruising boat, and I think I was the third owner. She's 10 feet wide, 39 overall, 27 feet on the waterline, and draws about 6 feet.
Mm.
Cutaway 4-foot skeg-hung rudder. You know, she's fairly narrow, big cockpit, which we really like for the tropics, and that was one of the selling points on the boat. Was most people, especially, you know, from Northern Europe, don't like a big cockpit. But I knew that I was going to be in the tropics with her, so I wanted to have lots of room outside. But she's not very big inside, you know, comparatively to other 39 or 40 foot boats. About the size of your shower, I guess, inside.
But she has served you very well, and I guess over the years you've done a lot of work on her, made a lot of changes.
Oh yes, you know, it's, as you know, it's a constant, it's always in process. There's always something on the list. Yeah, we've taken just about everything off and put it back on at least two or three times since we've owned her.
Right, right. And you've upgraded her in many ways, presumably.
Yeah, absolutely. We just keep pouring the money in.
Yeah, well, that's how it works. A boat is just a hole in the water into which you feed all of your money. Right?
That's it.
Mod cons, though. I mean, obviously, you've got, you know, modern navigation equipment, I imagine, and fridge, freezer, hot showers, water maker, all that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, we don't have hot water on the boat, but we do have a small water maker and a small freezer and fridge. We have a single sideband radio with a Pactor modem, so we're able to get email at sea and pull weather down. Yeah, it's quite comfortable for us.
Yeah.
We have a very small fridge with a cold plate, and if I put things up against the cold plate, they will freeze. So that's something that I couldn't do without. And we still take our showers in the cockpit with a sun shower bag. We call it luxury camping.
Yeah, camping on the water. Yeah, and why not? Yeah, that's fantastic. So, Linda, when you left 12 years ago, did you have a plan? Had you sat down with Chuck and worked out a route?
Well, we left San Diego and went to Mexico, and we decided we would stay in Mexico for quite a while because we had some family issues. One of my sons was had some medical issues, and then after he was okay, my dad was aging and he had issues. So we decided to stay in Mexico because we loved it, the cruising that we did there, and it was close enough to come home. We didn't want to be too far away from the family. And Chuck had always talked about going back to the South Pacific as the creme de la creme of cruising. Great cruising grounds there, beautiful. So that was always in the back of our minds that we did want to get to the South Pacific. And so when the issues with my family members resolved themselves, we did go further afield and left to go to Central America, then South America. And from there, we ended up in French Polynesia, where we are now.
Mm. You say where you are now, but you're visiting relatives in New York, right, at the moment?
Yes, I should say where Jacaranda is now.
Yeah, yeah.
But we come back once a year at this time for the American Thanksgiving to reunite with our two sons and the rest of the family. Mm. It's usually a couple of weeks.
Right, right. So the boys, they live back over East Coast now?
No, actually both boys are on the West Coast. I've got my older son, David, is 33, and he's in San Diego. He teaches at-risk high school children. And my other son, Joe, is 30, and he lives in Los Angeles, and he's a singer-songwriter musician.
Oh.
They're both on the West Coast, and we all come to the East Coast to gather with the other 30 family members every year.
So what's Joe's performing name, his stage name?
Oh, I'm glad you asked that.
There you go. You're going to get an earful now.
Well, do you know what, Chuck? We've got a radio station to play with here. So if you'd like us to play some music, that won't be a problem.
I would love that. I'd love to hear you play some of his music. His name is Joe Marson, Marson. And you can hear him on Spotify. And I think he's got a website that's not up right now, but he's redoing the website. So joemarson.com or Joe Marson on Spotify. And I'd love you to give him a listen.
Okay, well, we'll check it out. And we'll close the program with some of his music. We'll get you to choose one of your favorite of his songs a little bit later on. So I tell you what, Chuck, unlike, because people buy boats and then they sail off around the world. And, they get back in about 5 years, right? But you guys seem to spend a lot of time in the places that you visit. A lot, ordinarily people spend a week, 2 weeks, maybe a month, maybe 6 weeks if they're doing some repairs and waiting for parts to be delivered, whatever it happens to be. But you guys spend a long time in the places that you visit. And I wonder, do you enjoy immersing yourself in the local culture? Do you really, really get into it and eat what the locals eat and drink where the locals drink and do all of that sort of thing?
Well, we do. That's one of the reasons we don't move very fast, is because we like to immerse ourselves in the culture and the local population. And, we get a chance to meet a lot more people that way. So that's, for us, really, we both enjoy sailing, but it is really a vehicle just to get to point A and B. The real thing that we really, really enjoy is immersing ourselves in the local culture and, making new friends.
One of you is a talented photographer. Is that you, Chuck, or is that you, Linda?
No. That's that website and all the photos. That's all Linda's.
Ah, right. Okay. Well, I would urge any listeners to check out, and I hope I'm getting this right, jacarandasjourney.com. And then click on the photo gallery there, because the pictures are amazing, absolutely extraordinary. They will transport you to another world, It's important to you that then, is it, to meet people? Is that what it's all about for you guys, this great long voyage that you're on?
Yes, we really love getting to know a country, not just see it and breeze through it, but get to meet the people and understand what their lives are like And we spent 1 year in the Marquesas Islands. I had to apply for a long stay visa in order to do that, because the normal visa in French Polynesia, which is a very, very large geographic area, is normally 3 months. So the cruisers that come without that extra time don't have much time at all to spend in French Polynesia at the five different archipelagos. And we were very privileged to spend one entire year in the Marquesas, where we met a lot of friends. I speak more Marquesan than I do French. And as we left, we wanted to have a little piece of our hearts left there. So we sponsored a outrigger canoe program for very young children in the Marquesas. The outrigger canoes are their national sport, and they had programs for the adults and for older teenagers to compete in Tahiti. And but they wanted to start the kids earlier, like at age 8 or 9, but they didn't have the proper size boats or paddles or life vests. And we sponsored that, and the program is up and running. Our name, Jacaranda, is emblazoned on the side of the two outrigger canoes that they bought, and we're very, very proud to feel like we've given back to the people that we fell in love with.
Jacaranda is still there, though, right? Is she in the Marquesas?
No, we left the Marquesas in, I believe it was May, and we spent 5 or 6 months in the Tuamotos, and now we left the boat in Tahiti, the first time we've been in a marina in 5 years. So it's in the marina in downtown Papeete while we traveled back to the States.
So Chuck, 11, 12 years at sea with Linda, what's the most memorable place that you've visited so far on this amazing life at sea?
Oh boy, that is a really tough question. You know, both of us really enjoyed South America a lot. We left the boat for 2 seasons in Ecuador and did lots of land travel. And we really enjoyed traveling in countries with an indigenous population. So South America really filled that for us. And we just absolutely loved South America so much. We traveled all over. By bus and plane, and we basically left the boat on a mooring in Ecuador, and were able to bus around and see all of Ecuador and Peru and Bolivia and Argentina and Colombia, and so that was one of the areas that we really liked. But we both really, really like the Marquesas a lot. It's an island group that looks very much like Hawaii, very steep mountains that come right out of the sea that are all green. Lots of fruit, and not very many people living there now. And they're really starting to revive their culture. There's a big effort to bring the language back, to bring the dance and singing back, and the tattoo, that tattooing is coming back very strong. And we found the people very gentle and very giving, and we just was such a pleasure to be able to share that with them while we were living there. And we became friends with lots of people, and they're all more or less related, with aunties and uncles living all over. So just about every place we stopped, we knew people that had relatives at a different island, and it was really great. We highly recommend more people spending longer times in the Marquesas.
And I mean, this sounds like maybe a bit of an odd question, but do you have a sense, I mean, a real palpable sense as you travel around the world, particularly in the Marquesas, maybe that you're learning things
every day,
and that in doing so your lives are being, you know, enriched?
Yes, we learn every day, and that's the stimulation for us, and that's why we travel.
And do you plan to keep going? I mean, do you see an end to this voyage that you're on?
Well, we're kind of rethinking what we want to do from this point on. We've got a lot of options. The world is such a big place. We're not really sure right now. We never were married to the idea of doing a circumnavigation, and we are in the creme de la creme of cruising and back in Chuck's dream. So we're looking ahead and seeing what we want to do, and we haven't made any decisions yet.
Have you burned your bridges, Linda? I mean, do either of you have an apartment to go back to, or other living arrangements? I should point out once that's the rain. The rain is it's really setting in now. It's quite extraordinary. So that's the noise in the background.
Yeah, we can hear it.
It's great though. It's brilliant for my garden. In fact, round about Christmas time in Mallorca, we have an extraordinary crop of oranges and clementinas. So this is the Valley of Oranges, Taronges, which is not Spanish at all, because the language of Mallorca is Catalan. So, and there's some lightning. So we're going to get some clicking on the microphone, I should think, at some point. Wow, gosh, that was quite something. And some thunder coming too. So sorry, yeah, Linda, do you have an apartment in San Diego or a house?
I still have the house that we lived in while we were living there with the boys before they went to college. And it's rented out to a tenant. So that has been providing us some income that helps us with our cruising costs. But I don't really see us moving back there to live. It's been a great investment to help us financially support our cruising.
You mentioned earlier that you were an artist. I know that you're an award-winning artist, actually. And you work in mosaic, is that right?
Well, I did work in mosaics with tile and glass before we moved on to the boat. But that's not a conducive art form for sailing.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I had also done some beaded jewelry, and I've continued doing that. And I do a little bit of what I call mosaics with fabrics that I can do on the boat. So that has substituted for the tile and glass.
The lightweight arts.
Correct. Right.
Yeah. And how about you, Chuck? Do you still work here and there to feed the cruising kitty?
No, not anymore. We like to say we're more or less unemployed now. But no, I haven't worked for a number of years. I did from Mexico. I worked for a company that I used to work for in the States. I was able to work remotely in Mexico for a bit. But it becomes very, very difficult to do that now without having very good internet. And believe me when I tell you, French Polynesia does not have good internet. So we're just at times lucky to even be able to get our email.
What's the plan? French Polynesia, and then where are we heading to after that?
Well, Linda's just renewed her visa again for her second year. So, and I do want to point out that if you're a European or traveling on an EU passport, you do not need a visa for French Polynesia. You can come and stay for as long as you want.
Yeah, French territory, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. The limit on the boat is 3 years before you have to pay duty. So what some folks do that have been there a long time is they'll, as they get close to that three-year mark, they'll take the boat to another country and just bring it back. So the closest would be the Cook Islands. Some people, if they're in Eastern Polynesia, they'll go up to Pitcairn for the day and come back. Both those are 500 or 600 miles away, so it is a bit of a short hop. Right now, I think the plan is to spend another year in French Polynesia. We've just got into the society group, which is Tahiti, Moorea, Huaheine, Raiatea, Bora Bora, which we have not seen really yet. So we want to do a little exploring there and want to come back to Tahiti for the big Independence Day festival. And so we'll plan to do that. And we don't know. We're just going to kind of go along and see how it goes.
Well, that's fantastic. Eh? Open-ended life. What's the best thing, Chuck? What's the best thing for you about living on a boat?
I would have to say we're very close to nature. We have a very small, tiny footprint, which is a good thing. We don't use very much diesel, and we live quite a simplistic lifestyle. I really like the idea of it's like a turtle, of being able to travel and have all the benefits of traveling, yet have your house with you at the same time, so you can... If you start to get a little tired or burned out, you can come back to your space, your music, your pillow, your food, and recharge your batteries and set off again.
And if money were no object, let's pretend you win the lottery tonight, would you buy a different boat? Or would you stick with Jacaranda?
Well, you know, that's where we both have a, a little difference of opinion. I would buy a smaller boat, actually, but Linda wants to get a big catamaran, so there you go.
Right. We'll move on from that, because I don't want to start an argument. Linda, how about you? What, for you, is the best thing about living on a boat?
I just love the sea so much, and to be living on it. You wake up in the morning, and you're the first thing you look outside, and there you see the sea. And you see whatever is around you, the fish. Sometimes there's manta rays, there's dolphins. We have lived in parts of the world with whales, and it's just fantastic to have that vista from your front porch, is the sea and the horizon and watching the sky and the clouds, and then mixing that with the cultures of the world. Some of the most remote places that you'd never be able to learn and learn about and experience in the same fashion as if you were on a cruise boat or something else like that. I also, as Chuck mentioned, I really like being pretty independent and having a small footprint on the earth.
Linda, Chuck, thank you so much, both of you, for talking to Boat Radio.
Oh, it's our pleasure. It's great talking to you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike. This has been wonderful. And one day we'll get to Mallorca. That's on my bucket list, as every place in the world that I haven't been yet is on my bucket list.
Well, you know what? When you do, it'll be my pleasure to buy you a beer and cook you dinner.
We'd love that.
That's a deal.
Right now, Linda, why don't you remind us once again of your son's name? And why don't you introduce your favorite among his music?
Okay, my son is a singer-songwriter in L.A. His name is Joe Marson, M-A-R-S-O-N. And I think I will tell you about Lost in the Sun is one of my new favorites.
Okay, here it is. This is Joe Marson with Lost in the Sun.
Have you ever been led astray? Have you ever had good love and thrown it away? Have you ever been so lost and alone? Just counting constellations, hoping they'll guide you back home. Well, I'm happy just to be here. It's been a long night. You can get so get lost in the light. I wanna get lost in the sun. All those shadows behind me, gonna be so happy when they find me. Have you ever
Our aim at Street Invest is to put a trustworthy adult into the lives of street children so that they can support them in creating the most positive paths for their lives in the future. We work around the world, working on the street with the children where they are. For such a large group of children, the amount of funding available is tiny. Really, the funding that keeps organisations like Street Invest going comes from individual donors. Street children are the most abused, neglected, violated children, yet they are also the most resourceful, responsive and resilient children that we could have the honour of working with.
For more information or to make a donation, visit streetinvest.org.